princess all day as he plays ukulele on the hill above the bay. Pineapple princess, I love you, you're the sweetest girl I've seen. Someday we're gonna marry and you'll be my pineapple queen. I saw a boy on a Oahu.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to
Aloha.
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 And welcome to This Week in Mormons once again.
I picked the lily, put it in the basket. Pick the lily. I'm doing the hula, Jeff, is what I'm doing.
It sounds like you're picking lilies, actually.
That's how you do the hula.
Is that how
you might be interested in them?
I've seen it in person, I'll have you know.
Jeff, I don't want to know about your dating life.
As a matter of fact, it was almost 2 years ago that I went to Hawaii.
Well, congratulations.
It was lovely.
Well done.
Thank you. I love Hawaii, and I want to go back to there.
Have you been, man? How's your week?
You know how we do, how we do. It's been pretty good. My sister was in town, so it was fun seeing her.
Are you mourning the loss of your very BYU Cougars?
Sure, I'm supportive of BYU, but I guess I never, and I like sports, but I was never a rabid BYU sports fan during my time there. So I am aware. I'm aware that there's some sort of basketball tournament going on at present, but I guess they lost.
This has been a crazy, crazy tournament. I follow one of we have a professor out of BYU Hawaii. Named Chad Ford, and he's actually a commentator for ESPN. And I've been following his Twitter. I think his Twitter handle is like @ChadFordInsider or something like that. And you should be able to find him if you want to.
Okay.
But he's from Kansas City, and he's a huge KU fan, right? And my team is KU as well. And so I don't know if you noticed this week, but KU fell to a number 9 seeded Northern Iowa. It was actually a great game. I found myself pulling for Northern Iowa. I'm ashamed to say, just because they were such a no name team that you were like, no, this can't be happening. They're not going to topple.
It happened.
Oh, it was great. And Chad Ford is just going nuts on Twitter. I was loving life,
dude.
It's been a great tournament.
You love
your well, and BYU for the first time in 17 years makes it past round one.
Yay!
And then they lose in round two because they had no defense.
Yeah.
Or three-pointers.
I guess those chants of defense, duh, duh, I guess it didn't really work very well, apparently.
Just wasn't loud enough, I guess.
Where did they play when they do this? Because March Madness stuff is just in random venues, right? It's not at one of the different schools' venue, right? It's just wherever.
Yeah, BYU lost to K-State and Oklahoma, which actually Oklahoma was able to pull a pretty good BYU crowd, it looked like. I mean, they had pretty good, well, pretty even support. Obviously, K-State was a little bit bigger because it's an hour drive, but yeah, they did well. I mean, both teams played really well.
But not well enough.
I've been loving the basketball. And Fredette, in the first round, they go into second overtime and then win on a 3-pointer from Fredette. If they didn't win with that, it was like a clincher in the end. But it was just a great, great game. Yeah. Second overtime.
I mean,
you pray for these things.
Oh, yeah.
Good Lord, his hand is in BYU basketball.
See, it's fun that I'm almost teasing you for this, but you know that if you get me going on baseball, I will I will go off for hours.
We'll talk about the Angels when they convert to Mormonism, maybe.
Or about all of baseball. Yeah, speaking of the Angels, yeah, their spring training is not necessarily indicative of, you know, the season, how it's going to go, but we are doing terribly. We are like 3-14 in the spring training games. We're terrible. So,
ouch.
Yeah, but hey, baseball starts up here. Right up here in like a week and a half or so, man. Oh, it's gonna be great. Can't wait.
Oh, dude. As kind of a side note, the Hawaii thing made me think of it. But a girlfriend of mine from the days in Hawaii, she recommended to me offhandedly a movie the other day. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen the movie Dear Zachary?
I think sadly I missed that one. I was busy watching Sydney White instead.
It's a documentary.
She's the man. I love Amanda Bynes. She's just a real talent.
Dude, it's probably one of the most, I guess, emotional movies I've seen in a long, long time. There's some well-placed, pretty crummy language, so don't watch it with the kids, but phenomenally well-done documentary.
What's it called again?
Dear Zachary.
Dear Zachary. And is it about Zachary?
It's an incredibly sad, kind of depressing, angering movie. But if you desire to be moved by a film,
I like being moved. This is why I regularly attend the Twilight and Harry Potter movies. So it's going to be pretty good.
It probably won't affect the 14-year-old women as much, so you might have to leave your date at home, but...
I love a good documentary. I want to see that one that won the Academy Award. What's it called? The Cove.
Oh, The Cove.
The one about the dolphins.
Cove was great.
You saw it?
Yeah. I saw it before. It was cool to see it.
So I don't even know. Is its content appropriate? Is it okay? Or is it one of those Michael Moore documentaries?
No, The Cove is phenomenal. You can watch that. With language wise and everything. I mean, it's completely.
I mean,
clean.
There's intense subject matter because you're butchering dolphins, but
yeah, that's the thing is you're watching like an entire bay just be filled with
blood. Yeah, I saw the footage. The one I did see. Oh, did you ever see Food Inc.?
No, I haven't.
Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I've heard it. I've seen it retweeted a bunch of times.
The one that's
it
was also
a must see.
It was also a nominee. It was just all about just the American food industry. It was just it's sobering. It makes you want to never eat anything.
Dude, I sat down. You can watch Super Size Me for free on YouTube.
Oh.
So I sat down and watched that the other night for the first time and went and got a Big Mac and sat down to watch it in appropriate celebratory fashion. And it was actually another one of those that I was kind of surprised. You know, at the end of it, I was like, all right, I'm going to go and buy some actual food. They gave a stat in there that said something like 75% of American homes have a home-cooked meal less than 1 to 3 times a week.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And I was like, let's try 1 to 3 times a month.
Mm.
So it motivated me to, well, for me, I mean, I'm referencing myself. It motivated me to go grab some lunch meat and some bread.
Super
Something that wasn't frozen.
I feel like every year I have to take my annual, like watch Super Size Me once a year, because every time you watch it, you're like, oh, man. And
I
did the same thing. I remember it well. I watched it probably this past summer. I think it's when I got up one day and I decided I was going to start going to the gym every day.
That's exactly it.
And I was good for a while. I was great. I was going to the gym there by school and jogging and lifting weights. And it's funny because, I mean, I lost some weight when I was living over in Scotland anyway, just from walking around so much. But, oh, yeah. Just ruins it. And I know for you it must be a serious problem because you and McDonald's, man, if you don't own stock in McDonald's, let's just say I'd be surprised.
No, well,
you love them.
I'm an economist at heart. For $2, I can get completely full off of 2 double cheeseburgers. Or, you know, like that's my mentality.
You get full?
I couldn't go to the store and buy a meal for $2.
I guess, but yeah, I mean, you're a big guy. You get full from that?
Well, 2 double cheeseburgers, I mean, it's like.
That's substantial.
That's a little bit in there. And then if I'm really hungry, I can, you know, for $5, I get a parfait, 2 double cheeseburgers, a fry, and then a sundae. And it's like, that's a full meal. I don't care.
It is a full meal. And now by California state law, they will have to list what the calories of all of those items on the menu.
No, my average caloric intake is something like 5,000 to 7,000 a day.
Stop it.
It's huge.
That's not fair. I want to be tall like you.
You should be enormous. Try it sometime.
I should be enormous. I'm missing out. I've got to eat like the everyman. It's terrible.
For our listeners, I'm a 6'7 quasi-giant.
Though his license says 6'8.
It's true. I was generous with the lady.
So was I.
What can I say?
My license still says I'm 6'0 and 155 pounds, because that's what I was when I was 16 years old and I got the stupid thing.
All right. Anyway, we got some Mormon news to go into.
Oh, of course we do. That's what we do. That's why this week is in Mormons.
We're in.
Yes, I often forget my dutiful role as overviewer extraordinaire. So, this week we have Some great things about home teaching, and I think this might be more of a sincere discussion that I feel like we're going to have about this. I know we like to laugh about a lot of stuff, but I think this is one worth having because Al has some interesting, how do I say it? Some, you know, some people, you've seen some interesting stuff as of late.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently Salt Lake City is the least crazy sizable city in the country, so more on that. the Pope has sort of apologized for some of, you know, the indiscretions that some members of the Catholic Church have taken with other members of the church over the years, shall we say. But we want to talk more about what this means for Christians, and I will be following up with Glenn Beck. And to finish it all out, everyone needs to see the top 10 products sold at Deseret Book for January and February of 2010. Come on, give me some.
Dude, we might be stepping on the Mormon Times journalism property here. We might have to get into some turf wars over this.
This is nothing. This is common list. This is just,
well, I'm saying this is their prime time, man. A top 10 list, they love those things.
They do. That's why they're doing the blogger brawl, which is going wonderfully, I understand.
I actually should be nice for in the future we may hope to be sponsored by them or something.
We probably will. Actually, as far as the... You know what? I'm going to give a shameless plug. You know the Blogger Brawl deal that we made fun of a couple weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
My dear friend Jana McPherson has actually submitted one to the Blogger Brawl. So when Jana's is up, which I think is next week or the week after, go to the Mormon Times and vote for her.
Oh, beautiful.
We should... Even though I think, and I will stand by this, just as you, that this whole thing is ridiculous, I will support any good friend of mine in their endeavors to... promote themselves and their product and their profession, even if it is through a ridiculous medium.
She gave us some angry comments after that show to us. I was laughing.
She said, "I'm going to kill you all, and I'm never listening to you again, and I don't love you anymore, man, and you mean nothing to me, and you're not my friend anymore."
I don't remember it going down like that.
"And I love you, man."
Oh, and also, well, so before we get started. I wanted to mention one of the comments we received over on thisweekinmormons.com.
Oh no, are you going to wax about how happy you are that we have a fan?
Well, no, I was like, I just thought he gave so Rick posts up and says,
"No, it's Rich. It's Rich."
Oh, Rich. I'm sorry. Rich.
It's easy to confuse because of your love affair with Rick Satterfield.
Oh, so that's
easy,
right.
To say that. Yeah. You know.
Well, so Rich comments, he was impressed that we were able to get away with our scathing review of some of BYUSA policy and that kind of stuff. But certainly we have not been censored. But it was fun to get a kind of a sincere, genuine comment, and appreciate that, Rich. Keep the comments coming, folks.
You're a beautiful man. See what you do, Rich. You participate and you get a shout out. And so now you will be known by
your famous
60 or 70 people.
That's wonderful. Nigh unto 100 this last week.
Okay, nigh unto 100. See what we're doing. We're on the rise. And like Bill O'Reilly, we will spend every day telling you how many people are listening to us.
But we're both fair and balanced, by the way.
We're very fair and balanced. And you know what? We're running long on just jabbering, but you know, the whole healthcare vote has just gone through. But we can talk about that later.
Yeah,
anyway,
that'll be next week. Okay.
Take us there, Al. Take us there.
Oh, wait. What were we doing first? So home teaching. Well, I got a story. One of my associates back at BYU Hawaii, where I used to attend school, he has successfully, their stakes has successfully had 100% home teaching two months in a row, which I don't know if that's ever been done by an entire stake, but it's kind of an exciting thing for them. It was interesting just because it kind of goes against the status quo of the Mormon home teaching ways, I think. But the great thing about it was that they kind of went in there. Well, and maybe it's well, of course it's easier because it's a college student area, and so like 100% home teaching requires you to travel all of 70 steps in any direction to get all your people. But still, very very impressive thing, and I think that there's somewhat of a glass ceiling around the idea of home teaching more than maybe your standard 60%. I know for me, I get into these ruts where I'll end up going and visiting you know, like I'll probably average. I try and do the 100, but I'll get like 60 to 80% pretty regularly, which is my own fault. It's my own fault. But I mean, I don't know if to get 100% home teaching, it'd be a lot easier if I had 100% active people or people that would answer their phone 100% of the time.
Oh, sure. So make excuses.
I blame it on. I blame it on that. I don't know.
Well, blame it on them. Yes, you blame it on them. They will. I can't. They're less.
I washed my hands of this.
I can't visit them. What can I do? It's just, you know, no, it's not my fault.
No. Well. So it's should be an inspiration, is what this should be. There's a state that's gotten 100% home teaching two months in a row. Not just a ward, but the entire state. I mean, this is big news. This is way big news that that we're getting from you know, upwards of 7 to 10 stakes, or 7 to 10 wards, I'm sorry, all hitting the 100% mark. That means that our branch or our one ward, it's certainly doable. So something we're taking note of and realigning our efforts, maybe.
I agree. I think it's a nice idea. I guess I could talk seriously about this. I agree with the glass ceiling comment, and it's not always easy to get home teaching done, as we elders know. But I don't understand why it's so hard in the church to get people to go out and do their home teaching. And I understand it's harder when you deal with less active or hostile people, because I've been there too. You know, it's harder to set up in that when you're in that situation. It's not as, you know, because I've had times when I've taught all totally active people and it's a breeze to get it done, basically. But I think the majority of home teaching that isn't getting finished isn't because of people that are difficult to set up with. I think it's just because people aren't bothering and people don't try.
No, I think that's absolutely right. Well,
which is sad. It's just one of those weird things that speaks of the frailty of the human condition, you know, that we don't try hard enough to finish something that really is easy. It's just a matter of being organized and setting up a visit with whatever, five people.
Well, and the effort overall is to get family or get every home teacher down to about 3 or 4 families a month. I mean, I think it's kind of a rarity to have more than that, and if you do, you know, maybe upwards to 6, but that's once a week. You need to go out if you visited one family a week, right? The crazy thing was, as a missionary, you know, as soon as you see the impact that a member actually going out and being an active home teacher and, like, you know, going out and talking to members of the ward, checking up on them, doing that side of it, You gain an instant testimony of the power of home teaching. Like, you just, as soon as you see the impact that it's made in your mind, you're like, dude, when I go home, I'm going to be 100% hands down, no problem.
Oh yeah.
But you're right though. Once you get home and once you get all settled in, you're back in the game. I mean, it's like, oh, home teaching again. Well, and then we I don't know, man. I never go the first week because I'm. Normally, I just saw him the week before, and so you never want to go that first week, and then by the second and third week, I mean, if anything happens, and it shoves it on to this third and fourth, and it's just you're right, it's just a lazy kind of lackadaisical planning approach to it.
Exactly, you said it best, lackadaisical. That's just like, get it done, and I don't want to rail against people because we do this with love, but I'm perfect either. I definitely do my best to get it all done. I do have, you know, a testimony of home teaching. I think it's everything I've seen in the past, there's no question that it's divinely inspired. And I've seen so many benefits from doing it. And not always. Sometimes you have a home teaching situation or relationship where it's kind of fine. You know, it's nothing grand, and that's just the nature of it at times.
Yeah.
But I've definitely had experiences in the past where there's some people I've home taught where it has been, I've had just sacred, incredible experiences sitting there when people really open up to you. And it's not like we're watchdogs as home teachers, but, you know, the job is to look after people. It's not that we're trying to check off, you know, something every month to get it done. I mean, the idea of being a home teacher is to be there for somebody and to be the eyes and ears of the bishop with all of the rest of the congregation. That's the whole point. The bishop is as tapped in as they tend to be, incredibly so. It's amazing how much stuff they're aware of. You know, they still need all of us to
Which,
do it.
You know, it's funny, though, like, because I've never had, like, any super special experiences out of home teaching. Most of the home teaching that I've been privy to has been strictly, you know, well, like students in a church college. I mean, you go and check up on them. Do you need anything? No. Are you moving soon? No. Or when they are moving, can we help? Well, it's just three things. I'll put them in my suitcase. I think I'll be all right. You know, it's been a while since I've had a, you know, like a really fulfilling home teaching experience, which makes I understand why we struggle with it, but at the same time, I mean, the idea of hitting 100% is more than hitting 100%. It's the, you know, the fact that they're actually every member's accounted for, right? They know where everybody's at. Yeah. They know what the needs are, which is really the purpose of it all, rather than a percentage, which I think is what gets lost on the ears of elders, quorum, presidents everywhere.
I know. And it's like anything else. You probably remember on your mission, you had to keep track numerically of all the work you were doing.
Oh, the numbers. Numbers.
Oh, the numbers. And it's the same thing. There was that, my whole mission, there was that whole debate. You know, and it's the classic debate between quality over quantity, you know, quantitative over qualitative. What is better, right? And the numbers debate never ended because you say, how is the number of visits I'm having actually measuring my success? Right. You know, and it's obviously, if you have the right mentality, it doesn't matter. I remember one week in our district, we actually decided to not count numbers. Well, we'd still count numbers on the weeks. We had to, no matter what. And I know I had to. I was the zone leader, and I couldn't
face
the assistants and tell them we didn't do anything. But so what we did is we organized a system where we alternated every day as to which companion kept track of what was done. And each member of the companionship had to just discipline himself to not constantly look at the numbers and see how much more we needed. All we did is just knock something off. Like if we had a contact or whatever, we just put a little check mark and that's it. Not think about it. Not be so tied to, we need to get so many contacts before the week.
Did it change anything for him?
It was actually pretty remarkable because we did not keep track of where we were at during the week. And the every other day thing helped because I only had a general idea of how we'd done while I'd kept track on my days. So on Sunday night, we got together. We pooled together all of our numbers and counted, and we actually had probably a more productive week than we normally would have.
That's interesting. I never really saw the. I don't know. I don't get offended at the idea that it needs to be tracked and that kind of stuff. It never really bothered me, but I could see, you know, I definitely understood some of the arguments and stuff to that regard. But anyway,
well, it's like anything. If you're doing it to get it done, if you're doing it for the so-called glory of having your numbers done, the same thing with home teaching.
Yeah.
If you're doing it because you just want to get it done. I mean, who are you trying to impress? The most important thing is that we are in contact with people and care about. I've home taught people where I have, because of circumstances, never sat down and actually had a classic home teaching visit where we share a message and la-ti-da-ti-da. But I was in constant contact with them, regularly discussing this and that, even if it's just IMing or texting or whatever, you know, but always keeping up on them and seeing how they were and just keeping tabs on them and keeping in touch with them. And I felt like that was the essence of it. You know, that was the job. I was looking out for somebody's well-being, and that's what the essence of home teaching
is. It's true. All right. Well, this is kind of turning into a elders quorum meeting announcement thing.
It is, but I think it's worth saying because it is, I think, sad how often poor home teaching is the
norm.
Well,
so bravo to the Hawaii stake though. That's pulling this off. I mean, it really is. It's breaking the mentality that it's unattainable. When really, when you think about it, everybody that, you know, the six people on your list or the four people or the three people on your list, the families that somebody's asked you to check up on and make sure they have everything they need. I mean, that shouldn't be neglected. That shouldn't be something that we can't say, yeah, got it. You know, I talked to them. No problem.
We can do this. The Lord would not have given us this sort of a program.
Yay, verily.
It's true. Well, I'm serious though. If it was not in the cards for us to be able to complete it, it would not be given to us. And things always come up, but you know, you can't speak in general terms for everything. But it's able to be done. And the main thing is the joy to home teach. I think it's a good experience. It's nice to do. It's nice to get to know more new people. It's nice to establish that relationship with them. It's a positive thing for everybody.
Well, and the fringe benefit, right, is even, you know, it's kind of including everyone into, you know, everyone having a friend, which is hard to do. I mean, to make those connections as a suggested reading, I suggest everybody go and read Ezekiel 34. Fantastic discussion on the subject.
That's true. The one downside to home teaching, of course, is you might home, if you're in a singles ward, home teach a female whom you would like to take out at some point, but you don't take them out because you don't want to jeopardize a home teaching
relationship. No qualms about that, none.
I had qualms about that, and though I'm over it to this day, I'll call you out, Tristan. I'm still mad that you married Charisse. I really wanted her.
That fatherless child.
Except he just had a child. Anyway, so there's home teaching. But we should do it, people. Come on.
Anyway, well, yeah. I mean, everybody's got some excuse or another, but when it comes down to it, it's all kind of baloney. So
yeah. And so moving on to the world of some of the, I'm trying to think of a snazzy segue, but there is no way to say it. So anyway, the New York Times has an article from something the Daily Beast ranked America's craziest cities. But this is a pretty weak ranking, I think, because it's done by psychiatrists per capita, stress, eccentricity, how the heck do you quantify that, and drinking. Cincinnati ranks first. Yes, Cincinnati is the craziest city in the United States. And New York, San Francisco, and Las Vegas are all in the top 10. But, of course, last place is Salt Lake City. Dead last on the crazy scale is Salt Lake City. And this raises many questions. Of course, the fact that drinking is part of the equation instantly probably knocked them down quite a few points. Because, as we all know, Utah is a pill-popping happy land. So there has to be a decent amount of stress and psychiatrists per capita in Salt Lake, I would think. I don't know.
Well,
what do you think?
I love that so Salt Lake is number 57. Number 56 is Fort Worth, Texas, the home of the what does it say? George Machine Gun Kelly Barnes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So craziest city. I don't know. Again, kind of a stupid ranking idea type thing, but it's not hard to believe. I mean, you look at Utah. Look at Salt Lake. I mean, it's a city of kind of hipsters and just very. I don't know.
And hipsters are not crazy.
That's what I'm suggesting. Yes, hipsters are a bunch of Thai food eating, tight jean wearing. well, you're one of them, Jeff. You know.
Yeah, but I'm not huge on Thai food. So.
Yeah, see, you're fighting your culture, man. You can't do that.
But I'm very finicky and deeply in love with Middle Eastern food. So, you know, if that helps at all, I will eat falafel and kebab any day of the week.
See, and I just get offended at the city because there's no McDonald's right downtown by the temple. I'm like, where am I going to go for lunch?
It's like, what is a temple visit if you cannot have a 10-piece McNugget afterwards? No, didn't
and
we?
I know there's a bunch of those Mormon women out there that are right there with me. I've seen them.
No, but there is one. Remember when we did the City Creek episode?
Yeah.
Didn't we read about the food court? Weren't they putting a McDonald's in the new food court?
Oh,
there?
And the Sbarro.
And the Sbarro. Living the dream at City Creek, people.
Anyway, well, there's not much of a story here, but still funny that we got ranked.
We did.
The least crazy.
I think so far the funniest one I've seen on the list is the fact that Tucson is number 8 behind New York City. It goes Philly, New York, Tucson, and then San Antonio. I didn't realize Tucson was...
Oh, hopping. Granted, you got to drive an hour just to get to the crazy part. But.
Oh, the fun thing about this, though, is it actually lists some of the weird laws they have on the books in these areas. By Tucson law, apparently, if attacked by a criminal or burglar, you may only protect yourself with the same weapon that the other person possesses.
And Salt Lake's crazy law, if you persist in walking on the cracks between paving stones on the sidewalk of a state highway, you are committing a felony.
It does not say that.
Yeah, it does.
It does say that. How is that true?
It's just brilliant.
I think they're making that up.
They may be. The link goes to Idaho. Anyway,
these are
moving on.
This is this silly website.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry.
This is broken.
Okay, so
my heart.
So I wanted to talk real quick. This last week, the Pope issued an apology. Well, there's a little bit of brouhaha around this because the Pope issued an apology to the Irish abuse victims. There was a stint of Catholic bishops, I believe. Well, those in leadership roles in the Catholic Church that were abusing some of their congregation. And so the Pope issued an apology to the victims, but he didn't necessarily, you know, he didn't reprimand to their liking the folks that actually did this, right? Well, here we can listen to a little clip. The AP did a story on this. We'll just listen to the opening clip of this.
The day after Pope Benedict released a letter chastising Ireland's church hierarchy over the decades-long sexual abuse of children,
cari amici,
he failed to mention the scandal during his Sunday appearance at the Vatican. He simply urged Catholics to be intransigent towards sin, but to refrain from judging sinners.
Sorry is the beginning, and that's all it is. It's the beginning. We need to see the Pope coming here. He needs to hear us, meet us in the flesh.
The Pope didn't blame Vatican policies of keeping abuse secret, and he cited no punishment for derelict bishops.
All right, so he, you know, it's not so much that they're handling this poorly or whatever, but it's the reason why I bring this up on our show is I wonder.
We are not Catholics.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
technically. I mean, that's true, but I wonder. Like, there seems to be kind of this rash of these cases coming up in the Catholic Church, and my question for you, Jeff, is: the fact that this is happening consistently, you know, it is tarnishing the image of the Catholic Church. But does the fact that the Catholic Church is suffering from like this mistrust and people that are all of a sudden kind of giving up on their faith so far as Catholicism goes, does that hurt Christianity in general and by the transitive property Mormonism? You know, like say the missionary effort. I mean, is somebody that was had seen this in the paper, are they going to be less likely to entertain ideas of listening to maybe Mormon missionaries or you know, any other Christian denominations that might be out there?
First off, we are saying this under the assumption that Mormons are Christians.
That's true.
Yes, of course. But secondly, I don't know if it does. I think, actually, it's hard for me to say. Yes and no, it depends. Because I feel like in this sort of situation, it's detrimental to what people view as the organization and the structure of one particular body, that it's not necessarily saying that Christian doctrine is what is leading things down this sort of path.
Let me read you a quick quote from the New York Times. They just get a, you know, it's a quick little clip from a kid, Adam Cunningham, an 18-year-old heading for a hip hop concert with his friend Shauna. Said that although both of them had been educated at Catholic schools, neither attended religious services anymore because of the abuse scandal. How can you believe in religion with all this going on? Mr. Okay. Cunningham said.
I guess that's true, and that's something that the missionaries in the church are faced with every day. How can you believe in God in such an unjust world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I could see it, because I could see it both ways. I could see it being the kind of thing that turns people toward a different church because they're able to, they see what they feel are things that are wrong with the overall structure of one particular church, so they find a different one. But I could also see it going another way. This is not directly related to this problem, but when I was on my mission in Spain, most people were atheists and they wanted nothing to do with religion in general. It wasn't because of any sort of sex abuse scandal, but it was because what they felt that Catholicism had been imbued into the overall society at large, that when it was a dictatorship and everything like that, so they felt like they had it forced upon them. And this isn't the same situation, but I mean, I think the reactions would be similar. Does that make sense? In that,
yeah. Well,
so I don't know. I think it could go either way. I don't see it being a definite thing one way or the other, but I could see how it could be detrimental to Mormonism, because as Christianity suffers in the world and it's coming, you know, become under, sorry, it's become more and more, I want to say maligned. It's come under a lot more attack as of late, the Christian world our church and the Catholic Church have joined leagues a lot on a lot of things, because mostly because they are the most organized and hierarchical.
Well, and there's a certain kind of an luster around the Catholic tradition, right? I mean, people, sure. when you look at Catholicism, the thing that Catholicism stands around is tradition and the you know, just the fact that it's been around for, you know, about 300 years, too short of two centuries.
I thought you were going to say 300 years. 300-year-old church.
And yeah, like it's just, you know, when people think of religion, they think often of the Catholic Church. I mean, that's what it conjures up.
Definitely.
And so just by, you know, by strictly maybe an academic look at this of associating, you know, of tarnishing that image. I don't know. Like it's something that just kind of these scandals seem to be happening at an increasing rate. Kind of these cover-ups and things are coming out.
Sure.
Well, the Mormon Church, I mean, we're not immune from it either. We have some of the like the scout thing going on where there was a scoutmaster that was involved in something like this. But it's not to the degree that the Catholics are seeing it. And so it was something that struck me as
Well, the thing is this stuff happens in any sort of religious or social community. Just because
We're a theme park that Michael Jackson builds in his backyard.
Or at the Neverland Ranch. I mean, I'm Michael Jackson.
All right, we digress.
No, it made me think, have you seen that episode of The Office when Michael gets Ryan's phone number?
Yes,
he's calling,
Mac,
Ryan, this is Michael Jackson. Sorry. Anyway.
Jess, this is a serious discussion.
It is a serious discussion, but this is how we keep our ratings high, by providing moments of laughter during the tense discussions. I guess I think the problem is there are the frailties of man come out no matter what the organization is. The fact that we believe that we have the restored gospel and that we know that, it's still, I don't think it makes us any less susceptible to these weird aberrations and practices that can happen in any situation. I think the Catholic Church might be a bit more pronounced given just their structure and organization. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The way it comes out. But I think this happened everywhere. And sure, you hear about it in Boy Scouts. You'll hear about it. This could happen in any sort of organization of any type, whether it's religious or social or whatever.
Well, so, you know, I hope it doesn't hurt people's faith too much. Well, because in any like you said, in any organization, you have stupid people, right?
You do.
You have people that just that, well,
there's drama and there's temptation and wickedness in every organization because its members are still human,
right?
And I don't mean to say that they're human as if that excuses any sort of, you know, poor behavior like that. Not by any means. But
we shouldn't be shocked that people make mistakes.
We shouldn't be shocked. It's sad. It's definitely sad. It's a sad. It does not reflect well upon any sort of organization. But just as the Catholic Church has had problems with its priests or whatever, I don't think that, you know, that's not coming from the Vatican for those things to happen.
Right.
I do think it's legit.
Don't blame the Pope.
I do think it is legit in this sort of situation for someone to come under fire when, say, bishops have abused people or what have you, and they are not taken out of that position. I think that's a little more legit.
Right. Well,
because like anything else, it's like a breach of contract. It's not the authority that you have. It's not your place to do it. And the same thing, if in our church, we would hope that in a sense of if a heaven forbid a bishop or some sort of leader were to be engaging in inappropriate things of whatever nature, that if those things came to light, they would no longer be in that role because they shouldn't be. But it doesn't mean that what's coming from up top is necessarily wrong.
Well, you're right. And, you know, obviously the Catholic Church has stumbled or fumbled a little bit with how they've handled this.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, I think that may end up hurting them more than the initial accusations and stuff. It's just the way that they've kind of dodged around it and protected their own rather than trying to protect the victims a little more. But anyway,
bad PR will kill you, definitely.
And we know plenty about that.
Mm-hmm. So, moving right along. Last week, you may remember that I discussed some of my anger directed towards Glenn Beck.
I felt it. It was intense.
It was the fury of me. And it's been fun in the time since then, seeing the reactions of many, largely unassociated with anything I've said, because I don't really have a big voice. But there's a Mormon scholar here from the website Media Matters that says Glenn Beck doesn't speak for the Mormons I know. Because, see, let's see here. There's a thing called Bringing the Hammer Down, when Glenn Beck apparently talked about bringing the hammer down on people. He says, Glenn Beck is a Mormon, so am I. During the 19th century, my Mormon ancestors crossed the plains to live their faith without fear of attack from the mobs that had hounded them out of Missouri and Illinois. Watching Glenn Beck threaten to, quote, bring the hammer down on another person of faith makes my stomach turn. I could cite a host of scriptures from the Bible and the Book of Mormon about how Beck's attack on Jim Wallace is not in keeping with faith-based values. Suffice it to say, Glenn Beck does not speak for the Mormons that I know. And it goes on, and it makes the point. And it makes the point, like you said last week, that, you know, Glenn Beck is an entertainer above and beyond. But I the fallout from this has been interesting, that Glenn Beck doesn't speak for the Mormons I know. I've seen now, ever since the whole social justice thing, I've driven by churches in the past couple of weeks that just, you know, like the ones that have marquees outside trying to draw you in. And they just sit, and they've all said random things mentioning social justice. They say, like, you know, Jesus believes in social justice. We believe in social justice, just whatever. Social justice is part of Christianity. So it's been interesting seeing many, many churches defending their position on that, all because of this one comment from one Glenn Beck.
Well, I find it more from the comment from our show, actually. I think that's what's inciting this.
We are the reason.
Oh, we're movers and shakers, man.
We are. I almost said we are VR, if you ever remember VR Troopers. Please tell me you've seen that show.
I have not.
Oh, it was a beautiful wannabe Power Rangers. It was.
No wonder I missed it.
You're missing out, son. Well, I think that's it for our major events. Dude, I would like to read Deseret Books' top 10 best.
Oh, let's finish on a high note.
Best selling products from Deseret Book. And then I found there's another list I found from the Latter-day Saint Trumpet, which is a locally circulated quote unquote paper. I don't really know how to describe it. But the number one book is Dickens Inn, Volume 2, A Far, Far Better Place, which is an Anita Stansfield novel. Number two is Seven Miracles That Saved America, Chris Stewart and Ted Stewart, seven events in U.S. history that prove...
Tell me again why we're reading this.
God cares about his country. And then number three, How Does the Holy Ghost Make Me Feel? It's a picture book for boys and girls approaching baptism. Number four...
How can you do the Holy Ghost in a picture book? Riddle me this, young scholar.
The best part about this is that right after How the Holy Ghost Makes Me Feel is number four, Devil's Food Cake. Murder is on the menu in book three of this culinary mystery series. So,
I thought it was an actual cookbook. I was like, yes, thank you.
No, but look, it's a culinary mystery series.
Love it.
I think I've read it all. I don't think I've ever heard of it. This is like, you know, Emeril Lagasse, the detective.
All right, and then, well, do we really need to finish this?
Well, there are 10 books and 10 CDs. Most of the other stuff is pretty. Oh, and poor number 10 is No Apology: The Case for American Greatness by your best friend Mitt Romney.
Mitt, our man Mitt.
Mitt is number 10. I think, isn't this the first week his book came out? He's been touring around. That's very sad, Mitt. Not a good way to stage your 2012 run.
Maybe he kept the same campaign management that he had in the last one.
Yeah, I do like the CDs and DVD lists because of that. So there's Heaven Song, which is that new CD by Motab. So I'm glad to see that's number one.
Oh, that's gonna win an award.
Most of these are pretty decent, except number four is Beautiful Dawn by Mercy River, and I can only imagine what Mercy River entails. Maybe I'll.
Dude, one time I saw Jericho Road in concert.
Yes.
Probably one of the most fantastic nights of my entire life, because they don't have anybody telling them that they need to keep in shape, like I'm assuming NSYNC or Boyz II Men would have. And so these guys, I mean, it's just, you know, you can tell they've been married a couple of years and just had some great home cooking. I mean, they were kind of a little overweight, happy to be there, full of energy, but sweating like you wouldn't believe.
Tell me, were they still sporting bleached tips on their hair? Were they still?
They were, and
puka shells by any chance?
And they were the exact same size polos as when they started, which made it that much more entertaining.
Did they pop the collar though?
Of course, on all three shirts.
I almost thought you were going to say for all three songs that they performed.
Dude, it was entertaining for all the wrong reasons.
I desperately wish I could see that one. At my BYU, when was it? It was when I went to one of those acoustic unplugged things at BYU. For reasons beyond me, when the judges were tabulating their scores, Mindy Gledhill just came out and performed stuff. It just felt very...
Wait, who is Mindy Gledhill?
She's one of many LDS female singers.
Oh.
They all sound the same. Actually, if I may, my best story. I once worked for a certain prominent LDS bookstore company. And I was selling product at a women-oriented, I almost named it, a female...
Venue?
Woman-oriented convention-ish thing.
Symposium. Wait, time out.
Shh, there's no names.
And, oh, okay.
And we were selling product there, and up came Julie de Azevedo. Yes, the daughter of Lex.
I love Lex.
And Julie,
he's the Mormon Mozart. Did you know that?
Yes, and Julie's, you know what, does her own contemporary LDS stuff. And the best part was that she came up, she had one little table that was all her merchandise. And she was, you know, just kind of organizing it a bit better. And she came over to us and said, "Hi, I'm Julie de Azevedo," just with this grin that was supposed to say, like, we were supposed to just step back and be like, "You're kidding.
Did she?
Well, are you serious? It's you?"
Like, that's gotta be a tough kind of balance to strike, being famous, like a famous Mormon.
Yeah, we were supposed to be starstruck, apparently.
Only famous two Mormons, right?
I can't believe it's you. So it was great, because then my buddy Andrew just said, she's like, "I'm Julie de Azevedo." I said, "Well, I'm Andrew. This is Jeff. Good to see you." That's like all we said to her.
Like, was she a good-looking woman? Should I look her up?
You should look her up. I think she's a little... I think she might be a little too old for you at present. Arguably, she's probably married. I think you're better off trying to break up
Jeff
Torah.
Torah, I don't know about
it. It is not over. It is never too late.
We'll come back to that. Anyway.
Don't give up, man.
That's all for this week. It's been a good show.
Don't do it, Al. Believe.
For Jeff, this is Al. And
what is this? Do you think you finished the show?
This is another
now?
Episode of This Week in Mormons.
You're not the boss of me.
Have a good week, everybody.
Oh, fine. Well, this is This Week in Mormons. Have a good one, Al.
All right. See you, Jeff.
We'll see you later, everybody, on This Week in Mormons.